Welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show, the podcast with more opinions than a Sunderland assistant manager. I'm Andrew Slaven, and just 3 weeks after the Premiership season kicked off, we have our first managerial casualty. No more Miller time at Livingston. Elsewhere, Scottish clubs in the top two tiers took a break from domestic action to fight it out in the knockout stages of the Betfred Cup. Seven Premiership heavyweights and Ayr United progressed to the quarter-finals. We'll be speaking to Dunfermline and Partick Thistle fans about what comes next now their cup adventure is over. But the adventure is far from over for Glasgow City women. They're into the last 32 of the Champions League, so we'll be hearing from Glasgow manager and former Scotland striker Scott Booth. Also on the agenda, plastic pitches and disco lights. Alongside me is JJ Bull from The Telegraph. And joining us in the studio from Airdrie in North Lanarkshire, now travelling all around Europe, covering football everywhere, it's journalist Kieran Canning. Kieran, you pleased to be on the show?
Delighted.
Yeah?
didn't sound it there when I said that, did I?
Delighted.
Yeah. No, it's good. I like a League Cup round on a weekend. It reminded me of my youth.
Mm.
Coca-Cola Cup days.
Wow, that takes me back.
Yeah.
Remember the bicycle that Stephen Glass got?
Explain.
He won the Coca-Cola Cup.
Right.
I think it was 95, oh God, I need to get this right, 95, 96, something like that. And I think it was Stephen Glass got given a a bike, a Coca-Cola bicycle.
Did he ride it all the way back to Aberdeen in celebration?
I don't know.
Where is that bike
now? I wonder where that is now.
Was it branded? Was it a branded Coca-Cola bike?
Yeah, it was. It was cool. And it was that really cool Aberdeen strip at the time as well. It had North Sound Radio on the front of it.
Yeah.
God, I like that
did
bike.
Did you look at did you look at that bike and go, wow, I wish I was Stephen Glass right now?
No. But I did want the bicycle. It was cool. And that is what I remember of the Scottish League Cup.
Kieran, where have you been this summer?
Many places. Russia, particularly, for the World Cup, which was pretty good. I was in St. Petersburg in Moscow.
Nice.
In Kiev before that for the Champions League final. So I've had my fill of Eastern Europe this summer.
Mm, showing off.
I know.
Travelling.
Looking forward to talking about Dunfermline then.
Exactly. It's very similar.
Yeah.
What Russia and Dunfermline?
Boyd. Kenny Miller's away. It's opened up big time for Miller. He is the man for the Old Firm occasion.
Miller has lost the defender. Oh, brilliant. Kenny Miller. The value of quality.
There's only one place to start, and that is with the first managerial casualty in Scottish football this season. Kenny Miller was appointed player manager of Livingston just 7 weeks ago, but today Livy and Miller have parted company. Miller had talks with the board on Sunday, apparently raising issues he wasn't happy with. The board have reportedly wanted Miller to give up the player manager role, which they felt wasn't working, and become a full-time manager. But Miller isn't willing to retire from playing yet. He's 38 years old. Is he finding it difficult to multitask?
I've not heard of a player manager since playing sensible World of Soccer. And I mean, it's so difficult. I don't know if the game has moved on completely, but how do you, if he's learning how to do it and trying to like keep himself a top level player, I mean, he's older, he's got to try hard. How does he manage all that time? His backroom staff must be doing all the work.
Yeah, and also,
not all the work, but you know, a lot of
it. We speak about this quite often with captains. I think it might be easier for like a centre-half, for example, to be a player manager where the whole game's in front of them. Everyone's closer to them. They can organise a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it as a striker when you're so detached in many ways from the rest of the team, I think it'd be especially difficult. And yeah, it's like JJ was saying, he's learning on the job as it is. So to add in that extra layer of difficulty. Mm-hmm.
And trying to then manage a team against, like, Celtic was their first game in the Premiership. Like, how do you coach players? And also, like, asking if he's substituted himself on, you know, or off, I want to know how he plans that. Does he have a game plan and says, right, if I am rotten in the 60th minute, take me off? Or does he say, like, I'm maybe having a bad game, take me off, I need some... Because it's supposed to be so hard to concentrate fully on the game if you're also thinking about it. Players done it before, apparently, like Johan Cruyff, I'm not comparing him to Kenny Miller, but when he used to play, everyone that's played with him said that he used to see everything in the pitch and he'd tell him where to go, so really his coaches were more or less keeping him going, do you know?
Yeah, because you get players like that that you can see that are very tactically disciplined and stuff. It's not something that throughout the years I've thought, oh, Kenny Miller, he'll make a great manager, you know? He was such a kind of like freelancer up front on his own, just running around trying to create something rather than necessarily someone that had a great tactical brain anyway. It's not someone, yeah, I say that you would think.
Well, that's it. Is Kenny Miller the best person to get the most out of Kenny Miller? Like, you know, is it?
Maybe, yeah.
Before the season started, we looked at this appointment as probably quite a good thing for Livingston. You know, you've got a player who works hard, he's got a decent pedigree. A lot of the players in that club could look up to Kenny Miller and be, right, let's raise our level a wee bit.
And he was scoring goals last season as well.
He was scoring goals.
I think the thing with Miller, and this is a bit of a stretch, but you know, if you compare it to someone like Gerrard, or Gerrard's connections in the game have managed to attract maybe a certain level of loan player or whatever that Rangers wouldn't have been able to afford without Gerrard's connections. I think maybe Livingston were looking for that on a lower level, that Miller would be a well-known figure in Scottish football with connections that might be able to bring in a quality of player, which hasn't really happened so far. I mean, I imagine budgets are very tight.
Yeah, that'll be his big problem. He's got that budget. And he's played a 3-5-2. He's played a load of different formations, actually. He's not seemed quite sure.
Got to try them all out. Yeah. He only had 7 games to try and, you know, work it all out.
We're joined now by Livingston blogger Andrew Semple. You must be in shock, pal.
It was late last night that the story broke, and I got a message. I actually thought it was a wind-up at first. I thought someone was taking the mick out of me. But yeah, it just came completely out of the blue after all the optimism at the start of the season.
How has Miller been playing? Because the issue seems to be that the board weren't particularly happy with him doing both roles at the same time. Is it his playing performance has been that bad that they needed to get rid?
Yeah, to be perfectly honest, it's not really been working. I expected a little bit more from him. I understand he's 38 and the latter end of his career, but I expected a little bit more. The problem is he drops deep quite a lot, and it's not really working. We've not looked a threat in front of goal at all. And I think the board expected, with the appointment of Kenny Miller, to get a striker that was going to score goals. And from the first few games, it didn't look like that was going to happen. And I think that might have been one of the issues that they were looking at. We don't have a lot of options at the moment, so he had to play himself. It wasn't that he couldn't play himself. The likes of Ryan Hardy, Rafa De Vita are all out injured. So we're left with Kenny Miller, who's no longer with us, Jack Hamilton, who's only just turned 18 and was on loan at League 2 last year, and Lee Miller, who's 35 and he can maybe last 60, 70 minutes. So we've not got a great daily option, so he had to play.
So do you think he's been maybe hard done by from the board?
From my understanding, we've let him go. We've asked him to step into the manager's role and step away from the playing side. Looking at it from the outside in, trying to take my biased glasses off as well, probably yes. The club knew what we were letting ourselves in for. We spent a lot of time chasing Kenny Miller. We knew that he was going to be the player manager. We knew he wanted to continue playing. And just a few weeks into the season, because it's not working, we now want to take that contract away and just want him as the manager. From the outside looking in, it doesn't seem right to me. But yeah, that's just my honest opinion.
What do you think is going to happen now? There is a certain manager with a link to Livingston who is still available. who is it? David Hopkin, right? What do you think? Is it possible he come back?
It would be a daft move for us not to at least contact him. Whether he wants it, that's a different question. But I would certainly, if I was in charge, I would be on the phone. I would have been on the phone to him this morning, to be honest. The results we've been getting have been fairly predictable. You know, we won the cup, the group, fairly comfortably, and we expected to do that even with Hamilton in there. Personally, I expected us to win the group. We won that at a canter. We've taken on Celtic, we've been competitive, we've not been embarrassed. We've then taken on Kilmarnock, another top six team, and we've more than held our own against them. We could have nicked it, but a draw was about right. And then Saturday against Motherwell, it was another game that could have went either way, and we've competed with them. So it wasn't as if the performances have been poor. It's just, I don't know what to say, it's just a bit of a strange one out of the blue.
Well, it turned out to be Miller's last game. But Motherwell won in the cup game. Danny Johnson with a winner for Motherwell, who I actually think has been a real bright spark for them, despite not such a great start to their season.
Motherwell, they had the same problem last season in that they didn't start great. I think they lost the first two games as well, as they have in the league this time round. But then came good. Obviously, the problem is that Motherwell have every season is they bring guys in from the lower leagues in England. The ones that do well quickly move on. Mm-hmm. I've just seen Kipri, for example, and then replacing them. And it's one of those, you know, it's a thankless task to keep finding gems over and over and over again. I mean, I think they'll be fine. I think between Livingston and St Mirren and maybe even Hamilton, although we say that every year with Hamilton, they'll be fighting to stay up. I don't think Motherwell will have any problems in that sense, but whether they've got enough to fight for a top six place, I would doubt.
Let's go to Rugby Park and the man you can't keep out of the headlines this season, another Alfredo Morelos masterpiece. His hat-trick killed off Kilmarnock and led Rangers to a 3-1 win to advance to the last eight of the Betfred Cup. Bordeaux are bidding for Morelos and Steven Gerrard told the club to show some respect after what he called a derisory bid. They can't afford to lose him, can they?
I mean, he's good. I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world.
Really?
Honestly, yeah. Like, the goals he scored were taking advantage of mistakes. They were decent enough finishes. I don't know what it is.
But it's the perfect hat-trick. Header, right foot, left foot.
And arguably scored a fourth that crossed the line and wasn't given.
Well, yeah.
I think with Morelos, he's your typical confidence player. That in the moment, he's scoring goals. You saw that at the start of last season as well when he went on that run. Mm-hmm. And then come the end of the season, he missed quite a few chances and his head seemed to go down a bit. But I think he's a good example of what Gerrard's done so far. And not only, I know he's brought in quite a lot of players, but he's also revitalised quite a lot of the guys that were there last season and not performing.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Rangers are good again.
They are good.
Yeah,
they are good.
They look very well organised. They seem so well coached. Everyone knows their position and what they're doing. They're in the right position at the right time to keep forward passing going. They've got Morelos poaching around. The players Gerrard is getting in are all expensive and they're on good wages, and they're about their coaching staff on good wages as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I know we were just looking through some of the coaching staff they've got. They've got Tom Culshaw, who came from assistant manager at Hull.
And what was it, Michael Beale?
Michael Beale. Who, where was he that was fancy?
Like, he was in Brazil.
That's right.
He was learning Samba football.
They've got Samba football at Ibrox now.
Yeah, Sao Paulo, he was at as assistant manager for a year, I think.
Yeah. But they're just really well coached. And the players they've got in are just a step above. I think that little bit of fear has come back into teams playing against Rangers now.
But Rangers have always, you brought up about wages. You said Rangers have always had that.
Yeah, but they signed nonsense and now they I think they've got some good.
But is that not a case of then, okay, they've got players of better quality, but they also now have a manager and a coaching team that are getting the best out of those players?
Yeah, they've got the structure. I mean, I don't think many people would have anticipated a Gerrard team, you know, when you think of the way that Gerrard played, that he would build from the back, but that's very much what he's done. He's gone in, I think McGregor was kind of tied up before Gerrard came in, but they've got a much better goalkeeper. They've got two pretty good centre-halves. He's brought in another few fullbacks and Flanagan.
It's like a perfect football manager game. You start a game and you get it all lined up and you're like, right, I need this.
Maybe that's what he was doing in LA. He was just playing football manager in preparation, knowing the day would come.
I would believe it, and I don't think it's a stupid idea either.
Gerrard's been outspoken since he arrived in Scotland and he had a few reasons to be upset after losing Jamie Murphy. What looked like quite a serious injury, twisting his knee on the synthetic surface at Rugby Park. You know, Gerrard said plastic pitches should not be allowed.
What do you think of the plastic pitches?
I don't think it's great for a professional. I mean, I remember as a boy playing on the actual pitch at Airdrie because we could play seven-a-sides on it. It was great.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's the best thing for what Gerrard described as elite football.
Mm.
Yeah, he did say it. And I like that he's calling Rangers versus Killy elite football. I think that's showing respect.
I think it's showing respect to their manager, who is, you know, being at elite level, Steve Clarke, who was assistant at Liverpool when Gerrard was there as well. So they know each other really well.
He wants to legitimise it, and he's right to do it. I mean, to say this. And I don't see. So a lot of the pitches, especially the ones in the Premier League down south, they're all. Is that funny? They're all. Mixed, they're hybrid, you know, so they've got grass and the special magic stuff that mixes in, so they can keep them. Now, the problem we've got in Scotland is that our pitches are nonsense. For example, where I grew up in a small Aberdeenshire town, The pitches we used to play on, there was one down at the school that was just always, it's on a on a slope downward hill. There was one with a massive hole, like a literal massive dip in the middle that you had to run around for part of your game. And there was the big park, which had just mud everywhere. So wherever you went, you could never read a pass. If you played a pass to someone, it would bobble, bobble, bobble. You can't possibly predict it. So your control, on one hand, might be like Ronaldo level because you've learned to deal with a dice roll of a pass, but you shouldn't have to learn to play football. The dice roll the pass. So if, like in Iceland, they've got hundreds of these pitches, 4G pitches, as far as the eye can see. So they replaced, they've taken all the grass out. Every front garden is a 4G pitch. And so that's why everyone in Iceland's good at football.
Well, I know the issue is because, you know, it's the contact for, you know, on your knees and then your hips and all that jazz. Look, St. George's has 3G pitches. England national setup has 3G pitches. That is elite level.
Yes, but I think that it's also, I mean, a lot of those pitches, I mean, they might be used for training games and stuff, but they're used for different sessions. I think when you're going in, and especially when you've got, for example, in Murphy's injury, when you're having to turn on small, you know, tight spaces, it can cause a problem. And I think the problem isn't necessarily that it is a 3G or 4G pitch or whatever, it's that it's not a good 4G pitch like you do get as a
JJ was saying in
England.
Different grades, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing.
There is an obvious solution. Red Ash Parks.
I played on a Red Ash Park in Greenock, and I was telling JJ about this before the show. It was horrible. It was horrible. And I remember my friend playing centre forward, who was clean through on goal. I think it was 2-2 at the time, and he got sized down and he travelled for about 10 metres and his legs were a state. Oh, let's not. I don't think there are any Red Ash pitches anymore up in Scotland.
Certainly not at
Does that coincide with us not qualifying for a major tournament for 20 years?
Possibly.
There's something about Chris Boyd, right, for Kilmarnock. I know this is odd to range now, but I just really love Chris Boyd now. You know, he's going to be some sort of national treasure, like like Nessie.
Like Nessie.
You'll be going to, like,
similar body shape as well.
But he sort of takes these games in as though he's still playing legit. You know, he's a good player.
Yeah,
still.
He is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Also, talking Football Manager, I was looking through his stats earlier to see how they rate him. And all is, like, they, you know, the scouts for them still think he's very good at his positioning, his finishing and all that, and they're dead right. And his pace is 5. That's harsh.
Generous.
It's going to make you feel a bit sad, isn't it?
We need to move on and talk about Rangers in the Europa League. They face FC Ufa on Thursday after seeing off Maribor 3-1 over two legs. This is interesting. Have you seen this story about Ufa might not be able to see this fixture out because of visas?
Please tell me more.
So this may be a political Russian UK issue, but the Ufa board came out and said that they may not be able to play this fixture because they don't have visas. So the team might not be able to travel.
I'm sure UEFA would get involved before.
Well, what was said was that it normally takes 5 days.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, isn't long enough.
Yeah, well, it's true. The thing with this, the tight turnarounds of playing so many consecutive rounds back to back, normally we think about it from the fans' point of view, it doesn't give fans much chance to prepare trips and things. Even if they do turn up, I do think that Rangers will fancy their chances. If you look at, I mean, Ufa's two qualifying rounds to get to this stage, they squeezed past Progress, the famous Progress Niederkorn.
Yes.
I mean, what's not great for Rangers is they play the second leg away 4 days ahead of going to Parkhead as well. Mm. So that may be that may come into consideration.
They need to qualify. The money that Rangers have in them just now is, I'd imagine, based a lot on projected earnings from European football. So they really need to get through that.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven.
Premiership leaders Hearts edged to victory over Championship Dunfermline 1-0 on Saturday. Summer signing Ollie Lee striking with 11 minutes left to break Pars Hearts. Michael Crawford from Dunfermline fan site Pars Review joins us now. Dunfermline had the better chances in the game. You know, you had Hearts goalkeeper Zdenek Zlamal with some inspired saves.
Yeah, I mean, we went into the game slightly concerned. You know, obviously Hearts had just beaten Celtic the week before. And after a good start to the season, we had lost to Ross County last weekend. So a wee bit concerned, but to be honest, we were very, very proud of the team on Saturday. We dominated the game for large spells, looked every inch a Premiership team ourselves, and were absolutely gutted to lose the game in the end. If it wasn't for the Hearts goalkeeper and we hit the post as well, we really should have won the game. So proud of the team, frustrated though at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got a lot to be proud of. Hearts didn't play a second string team at all. You know, Ekpeazu up front, McLean, Naismith. You know, Dunfermline definitely held their own.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it was the full Hearts team. Obviously, they were missing their captain, Christoph Berra, but, you know, we've got a couple of players out injured too, so both teams were at full strength. And as I say, you know, we took the game to them. We played very, very good football. One of the best performances I've seen from a Dunfermline team in some time.
Are you very upset to be out of that? Because I know the Championship's very, very competitive, and so I don't know what you expect Dunfermline's chances are of coming up this season. Was the League Cup really a hope for fun?
We're definitely prioritising the Championship for sure this season. Since Alan Johnston joined us as manager, you know, we've progressed every season, winning League One, then finishing fifth, then finishing third last season. So really we want to, you know, push on this season and definitely in the playoffs, if not going for the title as well. So the Challenge Cup is more of a hindrance, which is why last week he played 11 completely different players and we still managed to win the game. The League Cup, less so, you know, but as you say, the Championship is definitely our priority this season, yeah.
Do you have enough in the team this year to come up?
I think we've got a good team. We have a reasonably good bench. If we had one or two injuries in certain areas, such as defence, I'd be concerned for us because only last week we had two centre-halves missing and we had to play a left-back at centre-half. Alan Johnston is now preferring a 3-5-2 lineup after years of 4-4-2. Mm. And he's very much committing to three centre-halves. So if we had a couple of injuries or suspensions in that area, we might struggle a wee bit. So if we have pretty much all our squad available, I think we are good enough to win the title, yes. Yeah.
Well, you got plenty of talent there as well. The Longridge brothers, you get Jackson in defence, Lewis up front, and you brought them in at the summer. You know, there's a lot of players out there that stand out for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of good footballers in the team this season. Johnston's always preferred to play football. You know, he's never been a manager who has bought a team of giants, you know, such as Ross County, for example. But, you know, the two Longridge brothers have been fantastic for us. Jackson is very much a modern left wing back who likes to get up the park. And of course, we already had Ryan Williamson on the right side, so we've got two very much attacking fullbacks. Louis Longridge has been excellent as well, playing in a kind of attacking midfield role. Technically, really good footballer. Definitely one of our best signings, yeah.
Hearts have looked very impressive this season so far.
Positive start, really great start.
Yeah, far less defensive than I'd have expected.
Yeah, I mean, they're still a very much a Levine team in the sense that very physical, big, strong forwards, Piazza and Lafferty, presuming Lafferty hangs around. But yeah, I think the big thing for Hearts is that even last season, which wasn't a great season, they were very strong at Tynecastle once they got back there. But yeah, to win it at Hamilton so convincingly as they did in the first day of the season, and then, fair enough, it sounds like they had to grind it out a bit, but to win again away from home is very promising.
I know we spoke at Hearts last week, and we talked about Hearing in particular and how he managed to open up the play. But it's tough against these Championship teams and lower Premiership ones.
Yeah, I mean, you heard Michael say that the Championship's obviously the main goal for them, but Hearts should really be looking at this League Cup as a real incentive for them, shouldn't they?
Well, they play Motherwell at home in the quarters, I think. Mm-hmm. So,
who haven't had such a great start.
Yeah, to I mean, I think that's, especially if Rangers have improved as much as we think they have. I mean, third might be a bit of a battle for third between Hibs, Hearts and Aberdeen.
It's still a battle for second, I think.
Yeah. Well, title challenge.
Celtic were faced with the prospect of losing three games in a row for the first time in over 11 years. But after being pegged back by Partick Thistle in the early kickoff, late goals from Moussa Dembele and Tom Rogic led Brendan Rodgers' side to a 3-1 victory. We're joined now by Partick Thistle fan Callum Stewart. Callum, you gave Celtic a bit of a scare with that equaliser.
Yeah, no, it was good. I thought potentially we were going to do something, but Thistle being Thistle, got two late goals against us.
Describe the goal to us by Mbuyi Mutombo. Am I saying that right?
Yes, yeah. So I think he's ex-Inverness. He's done the rounds a bit. But you know what? It wasn't actually... I mean, it was a great goal in at the bottom corner, but it was actually the young boy Fitzpatrick that set up the goal. So what happened was... Aidan Fitzpatrick. He's come through the sort of youth system. He jinked through a couple of Celtic players, squared it to the boy. Lovely finish. But he's only 17, so you know he looks the real deal.
What do you make of the lineup and how they approached that game?
See, Thistle's big problem is we don't get sort of in other teams' faces enough. Yeah. So it was quite nice actually playing against a team like Celtic where. You know, I mean, obviously they're miles better than us, but we were able to kind of play our own game, which is a lot more sort of passing, free-flowing type of thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I thought we played well. I liked as well we had James Penrice in midfield. So he's another one of the sort of youth players that's come through the ranks. And up until the other day, we were always playing him as wing-back. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he was in midfield, he kind of, you know, he got stuck in, bit of a kind of a younger version of Scott Brown back in his Hibs days, you know?
He's got that dangerous thing where he's wearing the number that doesn't correspond with his position.
Exactly. You look at the opposition players thinking, is he in the right position? What's going on here?
It's a cunning ploy. Just in case you weren't sure, he's a number three and he's playing as a six on that Partick team.
I like it.
It's infuriating.
What have you made to the start of the season overall? I mean, I imagine beating Celtic wasn't really, and getting far in the League Cup wasn't the top priority after going down last season.
No, I mean, to be honest, like the problem is because end of last season we kind of limped out the league. I was really, really disappointed, you know, because we had some really nice footballing players, but we didn't actually do anything with them. Or, you know, when push came to shove, we just weren't there. We just weren't at the races, you know, so like the sort of away to Kilmarnock, away to Hearts, we just didn't turn up. So this season, it started a kind of bit of the same, where no real bite, no real kind of John Lambie-esque, you know, like, you know, you need to get a point, so by God, you'll kick, scream, whatever, to get that point. But, you know, I think the game against Dundee United is going to be massive because, you know, is it a case of we've had a good run in the League Cup, but actually not much has changed, or is that the turning point of, right, we're going to start kicking and screaming and try to get points every which way, you know?
Partick were a top six 2 years ago and then relegated last season.
Yeah.
What's the sort of feeling for you and other fans? Do you think, is it looking good for this season to come straight back up, or do you reckon there's a bit of a rebuild to do?
I think there's a bit of a rebuild to do. I think we've still, I mean, the first game of the season, we had something like four subs and two of them were youth players. Right. You know, so we've not, I mean, I don't think we've done recruitment very well. I think we've brought in a few good faces and guys like Penrice and Fitzpatrick who are coming up from the youth ranks. They can't play every week. I mean, they're 17, 18, you know, I mean, like they're young boys. So I think in that sense, I'd be happy for sort of mid-table finish, consolidate and then push up for next season. I know that sounds really kind of, you know, it doesn't sound very positive, but I mean, it's a tough league. You know, I mean, you look at Inverness, Ross County, Dundee United, it's a tough, even like Ayr United, you know, they've got that boy Shankland that looks phenomenal, yep. Scored again at the weekend.
Alan Archibald, you know, has been there for a while now. When relegation happened, he said it was like a death in the family.
Yeah.
Are you still behind Alan? You know, is he the man to keep you going forward?
I think so. I mean, first of all, I don't think there's much out there. You know, I mean, I can't see any managers that would be sort of doing better just now. I think, though, it definitely, I mean, it comes back to that John Lambie thing for me, where, you know, when you are away from home and you need to get a result, can he do it? So I'm for the foreseeable future, yes, definitely behind him, but there's some big, big fixtures coming up that will definitely test these managerial credentials, you know? Because it's, I mean, what is it like they say that, you know, you don't look for a guy when they're winning 2-0, you look for a guy when you're 2-1 down, how they play. So I suppose it's the same in management.
So Celtic, you know, unfortunate to exit the Champions League at AAK Athens in midweek. Chris Sutton had a rant about the millions of pounds spent on disco lights and not players at Celtic Park. Pretty funny.
A really sad party they can have.
Yeah, but it's Europa League now for them. They travel to the Lithuanian side Suduva on Thursday in the Europa League qualifying round. And Brendan Rodgers has came out and said, Dedryck Boyata, despite effectively going on strike for the AEK game, may possibly play.
Do you think he should be welcomed into the first team? What do you think of this whole situation?
It's a bit of a farce, but I think everyone's to blame. It's like Rodgers to blame, board's to blame, Boyata's to blame.
His agent definitely to blame.
Well, they knew Boyata was going into the last year of his contract. Mm. He wasn't likely to sign a new one, so he was going to need to be replaced anyway. Then Fulham came with an absolute godsend, it would seem to me, with a supposedly £9 million, which I think most Celtic fans would have taken a third of that or less for Boyata. And the board had to turn it down because they got themselves into a situation where they had no fit or good centre halves to play a Champions League qualifier.
Yeah.
To keep Boyata, who then refused to play anyway, so you may as well have sold him.
Do you think Celtic are maybe unfortunate that the English transfer window is finished earlier this year? Because if it was still open till the end of the season, they could have played Boyata and said, listen, we'll sell you to Fulham for £9-10 million, but can you just get us to the Champions League?
I mean, you've got teams in Europe who wanted him. Lazio were quite keen. Mm-hmm. There's a couple others. And that might have affected him. It sounds like he just wants to go to somewhere different. I don't want to say bigger because that's not nice, because our league is amazing. But you go to Lazio or something like that. I think about £8-10 million is about his value, considering what, if you get him a 5-year deal, what will he be in the future?
He's probably based on the fact he's only got a year in his contract, which would normally bring down
the
valuation.
I retract my statement and make it £6 million, is what I would say he's worth. However, I kind of agree. It's kind of a farce. I know people are saying that he should never play again, and the board have gone quickly to try and smooth it over and say, no, there's no problem. I think
if he were to sign a new contract and there was a possibility of him staying long term, they might be able to get over it. But given he's probably going to leave anyway, I don't really see the point bringing him back for.
They just give him a new contract with a release clause in it, you know, to a foreign club, stick that in for £6 million, just trigger it. So they get him another year, he stays happy, gets a bit more cash in his pocket. Might work. Although I was told earlier by someone.
I was just about to bring this up. Sneaky little rumour going around about Scott McKenna from Aberdeen potentially.
The rumour is he might go to Celtic. It's not like a weird rumour.
Conversations apparently happening there.
Celtic scouting team now sort of exceeds to Man City's academy and the rest of the SPL.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Bounce three here for Doherty. Bounce around. Sam Kerr scored! Sam Kerr! Big goal! Less than 6 minutes to go. Is that the goal which takes Leicester City into the last 32?
It may have been a bad week for Celtic in Europe, but there were scenes of celebration elsewhere in Glasgow. That's because Glasgow City women made history by progressing to the last 32 of the Champions League. I'm delighted to say their manager, former Scotland striker Scott Booth, joins us now. Scott, you knew you had to beat Polish champions Górnik Leszno by a score bigger than 1-0. Otherwise, Anderlecht would have went through on goal difference. You were 1-0 up, 6 minutes to go. What was going through your head at that point?
I didn't actually know that there was only 6 minutes to go when we scored. The sort of second half passed so quickly, and we were just focused on trying to get that next goal. And we had a number of possibilities before that, but it was just great to get the goal when it came, and it was a really good finish from Sam Kerr.
Sam Kerr, speaking of her, she's 19. You signed her at the age of 16. Captain Scotland at various youth levels. What sort of talent do you think she is?
Oh, she's a massive talent because she has really progressed so much since bringing her in. And we brought her in, she was really young, but we knew right from the start that she had all the attributes to be a top player for us and for Scotland going forward. And so she's still well, she's still going to get better as she gets older. She's developing her game, and she's added goals over the last few weeks, which is something that we've been working on for quite a while now. And, you know, she's an all-round midfield player that can play slightly deeper. She can also play further up the park. She is incredibly fit. So from that perspective, a perfect sort of midfield player, and her attitude is also spot on.
With Sam Kerr's winner for you guys, you've got Barcelona in the last 32. Samacio Barcelona of Cyprus. What do you know about them? They're yet to concede a goal in the Champions League this season. It must be a tough ask.
Yeah, I mean, all the teams that were in the draw were good sides, and you know there were definitely sides in there that we really did want to avoid. But you know that whoever you get in the last 32 is going to be a real challenge, and this is no different. You know, I was quietly pleased that it wasn't actually Barcelona. Still, this side, I've seen them play already, and they're a good side. And as you say, their record from the qualifying group is excellent. Scored goals, didn't concede. And I can see why, having watched them now. So yeah, it'll be a tough ask, but it's doable for us. That's the way I would put it. You know, we would have to play our best, and we'd have to do that over the two legs. And you know, that's what we intend to do. And you know, the fact that we do know that we can get through this if we play our best is something that's going to give us confidence.
Glasgow City's best achievement was getting to the quarterfinals 4 years ago. Not the best achievement, but that was their record so far in the competition. They lost against PSG 4 years ago. So, are you going to match that or beat that? Is the trophy coming home?
I think that may be a little bit too much to ask, given the quality of the sides that are in this tournament, and the ones that are, you know, year on year into the last stages, you know, semi-final, final, some massive clubs there with real financial clout around Europe. So, you know, for us, right now the next step is to make it through this one to the last 16. And if we get there, which is a big ask, but the players are looking forward to it, and we are confident that we can do it if we can, then, you know, we'll take whoever comes out the hat for us, because it would just be nice to get to that stage.
You bring up the you know, the financial clout that some of the other European women's sides may have. You know, I'm just thinking about what, for the wider women's game in Scotland, what would it mean for Glasgow to progress further? And, you know, what are the differences between yourselves and other teams?
Well, I think, you know, there's a number of different differences in different countries with big clubs. Because of their finances, they have their own training grounds. Unfortunately, we don't, and it would be nice to be helped in that way. Because at the moment we are the top side in Scotland, we would like to you know get a little bit of help as far as where we train, the quality of the training grounds, whether it's a school field or one of the council-run playing fields. We'd just like a little bit more help in that department. But we get a lot of support from various sponsors. We have unbelievable volunteers that work in the background and the foreground for nothing, and other than the love of the game and trying to better the women's game. And there's lots of areas that still needs developed within the women's game. But I think if we were to get to the last 16, then it certainly helps promote women's football again in Scotland. And that I think is one of the main tasks, is to keep the women's game at the forefront, you know, as far as the league is concerned, trying to keep doing, you know, great things in order to get some level of publicity and hope to generate more kids playing the game, and also more people coming to watch the games.
It's time to look around the grounds now. It's our man Craig Anderson with the headlines from League One and Two.
With the Championship taking a week off for the Betfred Cup action, it meant League One and League Two were given some limelight, and these leagues are already shaping up for some tasty battles. While Arbroath remain top of League One, Airdrieonians are right next to them in second place after a hard-fought victory over Stenhouse Muir at Ochilview. Airdrie's day didn't get off to the best of starts, as Scott Robertson was ordered off after 13 minutes when he felled Alan Cook, as the Stenny winger looked to run through on goal. Stephen Finlay's side took the lead just before the break when Kieran McDonald's cross found Ryan Conroy, who sent the ball into the net with a header. Then Hismir were back on level terms just before the break when Sean Crichton scored an own goal, but the visitors got themselves ahead again to claim the win, with Conroy netting the second of the game, giving the team from Lanarkshire something to celebrate at the final whistle. East Fife remained bottom of League One but got their first league point of the season with a 2-2 draw against Raith Rovers at Starks Park in a game where three of the goals came from the penalty spot. In League Two, Annan Athletic moved themselves into joint first behind on goal difference to Peterhead with a 3-1 win over Queen's Park at Gala Bank that settled with four goals in the first 7 minutes of the second half. Tommy Muir put Annan in front just after the break, which was cancelled out by smart Oslo Dolor shortly after. Ryan Cinnamon gave Peter Murphy's men the smell of victory a couple of minutes later, with Aidan Smith adding the crucial third to see off Gus McPherson's side. Edinburgh City made it two wins out of three in the league with a 3-1 win over Stirling Albion that leaves the fourth bank outfit second bottom with no points to show for their efforts. Scott Shepherd was first to score with a penalty after he was fouled by Kyle Banner, but Stirling equalised on 54 minutes thanks to Mark Stewart. The Citizens nudged in front ahead through Conrad Balotone, with Danny Hangling's shot needing something of a deflection off Jordan Allen to confirm a good home win for City, who are up to fourth after this display.
Elsewhere in the Betfred Cup, Aberdeen 4, St Mirren 0.
Aberdeen were absolutely superb, St Mirren were not. But Aberdeen played some new players. Little Frank Ross got a game, he was good. Scott Wright was fantastic. He's so fun to watch. He just looks up and he constantly wants to go forward. And he's got real skill, real good close ball control. Can go past people. He set up Stevie May for that goal. He could have taken it himself. And another thing I like about when Aberdeen scored, each of the goals, the entire team went over to celebrate. You know, that shows good team spirit.
Unity.
Yes, and that was actually really nice to see.
Did Wilson play?
No, James Wilson did not play. So he's just... McInnes is always very cautious with bringing people in. And what's one of the complaints a lot of people have made about him over his time at Aberdeen is that he's very cautious with his tactics, his players, and he looks after them. But Wilson, I'd imagine, will be given time to, you know, settle in, find somewhere to live, that sort of stuff. And one of the things I took out of it as well was that Graham Shinney is superb as a left-back. And in that Aberdeen team, he starts as a left-back, and ends up being like an inverted fullback, so he comes into the midfield. So it adds to the... You don't lose the energy from midfield that you need. And Lewis Ferguson, he is such a player. Like, on the pitch. I have no idea what he does after. I don't know how often he's been to Exodus or anything like that. In a couple of years, it looks like he could be a proper, like a real, not McLean replacement, but I'd put him in the first team straight away now.
And the inverted fullbacks thing, further evidence that Pep Guardiola is inspired by Derek McInnes.
Yes, I remember him saying that. Aberdeen have Hibs.
Yep.
Which is probably, I'd say, the highlight of the draw for the quarter final.
I wouldn't disagree.
Yeah.
Hibs beat Ross County 3-2. Played a second string team, really. Took a calculated risk, and it paid off for Neil Lennon.
Hibs are great fun this season. It's like 3-2 is kind of like your average Hibs score. But Stevie Mallon scored again. He's been very good.
I think Horgan, who got the winner for Hibs, is an interesting one as well. You know, Republic of Ireland internationalist, and he's wanting more games. He's came in from Preston, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he was really highly thought of in the League of Ireland. Went down to Preston. I think he had quite a good start last season and then fell out of favour. So I think he could be an interesting option.
Ambrose made one of his...
textbook errors, yes. From Ambrose. He's such a good centre-half, but he is so prone to a silly mistake.
I think that was why you could question, is he really a good centre-half? I know what you mean, like,
yeah,
that a lot of the time he looks really good and comfortable, but you know the massive error is
always lingering.
Is always round the corner.
Queen of the South 2, St Johnston 4. I felt really sorry for Queen of the South. They played really well, and it took it to extra time.
Johnston... I finally worked out how to score.
Tony Watt. Best day of Tony Watt's career since Barcelona.
Two goals made the Queen in the South.
Yeah. Well, they've got a decent reward coming up against Celtic now, the quarterfinals.
Sure. I mean, it's going to be very difficult to get past.
It's difficult, but you know, you want to face the best teams, right?
Speaking of pitches, McDermott's often not the best. It's maybe just early enough in the year for Celtic not to struggle too much. But yeah, getting into November, December, even by May, it's still not great.
Do you want to know why Queen of the South are called the Dunhamers?
Do I?
Yeah.
I do. Please tell me.
So Queen of the South, Dunhamers are their nicknames, and most people who come from there are called, oh, you're Dunhamers. So ye olden times, you know, building the railways and Clyde shipyard, all that jazz. Apparently everyone, you know, after, I'm kind of, you know, dramatising this a little bit, but you know, everyone would finish work and be, oh, do you fancy a pint? Oh, do you want to get some food? I don't think that really happened right then. Going out for lunch. But yeah,
vegans,
everyone,
all vegans.
Everyone would go back home. You know, if you were from the area, you know, the lowland areas, you'd go back home. So everyone in Glasgow and all that jazz would be like, oh, they're doing hammers. So that's why. Or they go back down home, for those English listeners. So Dundee 0, Ayr United 3. Pretty amazing from Ayr. Two goals from our man Shankland, who we've talked about quite a bit. You know, possibly there was talk about a move to Dundee for him. But he's a very exciting player.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised by that, just in the sense that a team further up the league than Dundee aren't looking at Shankland, to be honest.
Well, Shankland's had a weird career, so he never really got a game for Aberdeen. But so he came through Aberdeen, I think he's from Glasgow though, originally, and had to move somewhere to get playing time. And he had a spell at Morton, I think, and at Ayr. He's finally got game time, and he's, sure enough, he's found out, you know, found the back of the net. So maybe there's a reason that no one higher up's taken him on, but he's playing very well just now. You have Moussa sent off. So yeah. He's got his yellow card, right? Neil McCann is going, he goes into a challenge, and it could go either way. A yellow card for a tussle in the air, go for a header, right? And McCann on the sideline is raging, shouting at him, "You've got a yellow card!" I don't know, another Scottish descriptive words he was calling him afterwards. And he's shouting at him, and then Moussa, immediately after, barges into the boy, I can't remember who he barges into, sends him flying, it puts his forearm into the back of his head, which, as you know, is not allowed in football.
It's not a nudge.
They're not allowed to Scottish football. It's a man's game. And he goes down, and it's just yellow, and he's gone. And you think, what are you doing?
To be fair to Moussa, after the whole Morales and Naismith gates of the past 2 weeks, he probably thinks it's pretty much impossible to get sent off in Scottish football anymore.
I think he was just testing it, testing the water.
But what a problem McCann's got there is, he lost that player. Is it no respect for him? He's not listening to him? Is he stupid? Like, what's he playing?
I think it's, I feel sorry for McCann, because he's done the right thing as a manager, saying, you know, watch it. If he's not listening to you, just hook him. And I would be amazed if he, you know, plays again.
Well, see, if he hadn't got booked for that second yellow, he'd have been off, definitely. They would have just subbed him and got rid. They cannot score. And I get the boy Mendy up front, said last week, but when we talked to Patrick Barkley, saying that you know, he's got better finishing. But he had a couple shots on target in this game, and there had no venom behind him. There's no power or anything.
There seemed like a real lack of unity between Dundee. It was one of those where really, actually, we should just be celebrating Ayr United and the way that they played, and the goals that they scored were excellent, absolutely excellent. And now they've got, you know, I think this is probably the best reward for any team is getting a game against Rangers. They go to Ibrox.
Yeah.
Quarterfinals. And good on them.
Yeah, and if they play like they did against Dundee, I think Rangers will take more of their chances, and they will get more chances than Dundee did. Yeah, like I said, Rangers just look genuinely quite good, so they're probably going to go through that. But you never know. Also, one thing I liked about that game, so you saw maybe in down south, there's the boy Ederson who, I keep saying the boy, don't know if you noticed that.
Boy.
I keep saying the
boy.
I don't normally do this, by the way. But Ederson hit this beautiful 80-yard pass to Sergio Aguero, who scored. Ross Doohan did something very similar to Lawrence Shankland.
Yeah, the Scottish Ederson.
Does he also have a terrible neck tattoo?
He's a footballer, so probably. I don't know. But yeah, Shankland's really come on, and I think it won't be too long before you see him getting linked with clubs higher up. In Ayr, if they keep him and keep going, they could easily be in the mix. Yeah.
Oh, he signed a contract extension in the summer, didn't he? Or just before the summer?
There's always one team who comes in the mix that you didn't expect, and it could well be Ayr this time.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Monday after Hibs take on Aberdeen in the Premiership. We'll speak to you then.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com, and make sure you check out our other football podcasts, The Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker, and of course, The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.